This week, a rousing piece about community involvement and the Freemasons' call to be active, civics and Freemasonry. Then, we'll face some hard facts relating to the two main factions in Freemasonry, the Esotericists and the Standard Brothers. Do Esotericists even belong in Masonry? Have we ever belonged? Illustrious Brother Harrison stops in for a new Masonic Minute where he examines a young Jewish man, a tecton, and his role as a builder. We'll wrap it up with an exploratory piece, literally. What does it take? Would you answer a classified ad like this? Hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition in case of success. Can you hear the call to adventure? Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 429. Well, first things first, I hope you guys all really enjoyed last week's episode, a performance of The Lost Word, which was quite the honor to be able to put up. My thanks again goes out to all the brothers who put that one together. This week on the program, I've got two, maybe three papers, plus we've got illustrious Brother Harrison on for the Masonic Minute. Before we get started, I did have a couple updates to my speaking schedule, so if you guys are going to be out and about, you know, I'm all about education, so I always know where I'm going to be for Masonic education, so I might as well share it. On January 28th, just later this month, I will be at Lodge Vitruvian, number 767, out in Indianapolis, Indiana. Then shortly after that, on the 21st of February, I'll be doing a presentation at Landmark Lodge. But really, don't come to see me. Come to see the other speaker, Bull Garlington. He's fantastic. We had him on the program a couple years back talking about Star Wars and Freemasonry. So be sure to check that one out. And then the next day, I'll be at Libertyville Lodge doing the Ark and Freemasonry, like the Ark of the Covenant. And I'm going to cover a lot of ground, probably Masonry, its connection to the Ark, like in Royal Arch. We'll talk about the biblical history, the Old Testament, that is. I'll take you through some archaeology. We'll talk about where the Ark may have ended up, right? You've heard Ethiopia, that kind of stuff. I'll take you through all of the science that talks about where the Ark probably went, where it went, evidence of temples and all that good stuff. So make sure you check that one out. If you want to go to that one, I need you to register, and we'll have a link to register in the show notes. But again, that's another one where the Ark and Freemasonry sounds cool, but what I'm really looking forward to is hearing my good friend Spencer Hammond, who is our district education officer up here in the First Northeast, to talk a little bit about the tarot. So some tarot fundamentals. It's going to be fantastic. I myself love the tarot, right? Like I'm a huge fan of Paul Foster Case, Bode, all that good stuff. And even what later came after Case passed away. But if you're curious about that stuff, you know, we'll talk at another time. So let's get into this week's first paper, and it comes to us in its adapted form from the Short Talk Bulletin. So originally it was not Short Talk Bulletin. Short Talk Bulletin adapted it to be somewhat of a shorter piece, but I really believe in this, and I talk a little bit about it in a paper you can read of mine that's published on academia.edu about why religion and politics need to be discussed in Lodge. I know you'll disagree with me all day long, but take a look at that paper and see if you agree later. If you want to find that paper, you can go to my author page. There's a link on WCY Media, and you can scroll down to the bottom, and there's a link there that'll take you right over to my academia.edu page, where I think I've got just, those are really like my more scholarly articles. I think I've only got three up there, so it shouldn't be too hard to find. But anyway, this first one is called Civic Responsibility of Individual Lodges, and it's by Marvin L. Anderson, past Grand Master of Arizona. Now, before we get started, let's define civics, because people just don't know what that means. They think it's like nationalism or like national pride or voting or whatever, but just a basic explanation. Civics is the study of the rights and duties of citizenship. So everything that you can think of in terms of what enables you to be a part of your community in the context of the development of your small society that you live in, right, in ever-expanding ways. And if you think about it, Freemasons had a huge part in the civics in the beginning of America, and somehow we let that slip by. Civic responsibility of individual lodges. This short talk bulletin is adapted from a challenging paper given at the Southwestern Masonic Conference in Little Rock, Arkansas in 1974 by Brother Anderson when he was Deputy Grand Master. It was said long ago, and has been repeated many times, that to solve a problem, that problem must be first defined. To correct any situation, we must be aware of the situation as it exists. Our Masonry, as we now practice it, is called speculative. According to Bernard Jones, Freemasonry's Guide and Compendium. Quote, to speculate is to take a view of anything with the mind, to consider anything mentally. It comes from the Latin, which means I see or I look. And from the Latin we have several other words such as spectacle and spectator. In the 17th century meaning of the word, anyone who was given to contemplation or to thoughtfulness was indulging in speculation. The speculative man was the idealist, not the man of fact and practice. Speculative masonry arose to distinguish 17th century masons from operative or stone masons. Most 20th century men do not want to be spectators within their organization. Speculative is a descriptive word in a historical sense, but the concept of tranquil contemplation is not helpful today to encourage craft masonry to be active. J. Fred Latham, past Grand Master of Oklahoma, said, some 260 years ago, the foundation for the present-day structure was poured. For the first 50 years, our brethren cut and tried, fitted and revised, adopted and discarded many ideas and procedures. Since that time, some 200 years, we have, more or less, let things drift. Our forefathers of the revolutionary days were extremely active in public affairs and accomplished much outside the lodge room. It would appear that Freemasonry has resigned itself to those accomplishments and is unwilling to do much thinking of our own. We, of the present day, need to better ourselves and begin to do something besides expressing lovely platitudes and referring to ancient accomplishments. They were great, and we should not forget them. On the other hand, we should use their accomplishments as incentives to attain greater things in this age. We should try to do as much under present-day conditions as they. That would give us a real job. We do owe a civic duty as Masons. Most Worshipful Brother J. Clay Thrash stated, quote, Masonry's role is self-evident. Its work is done when it has unobtrusively, in the dissemination of its precepts, and by example of its brotherhood, fitted people for a sound, well-informed citizenship, capable of electing responsible representatives of government for the people, of the people, and by the people. To take this further, Masonry is the system of brotherhood, but it is also the system of order, and if order is not enforced, love and peace and harmony will be of little avail. Paul the Apostle called for a submission even to a pagan government because it was trying to promote some kind of harmony in a pagan world. This demand is still with us. For any power that brings order out of chaos is working in the name of the Supreme Architect of the universe. J. Louis Monocle, past Grand Master of Arizona, told us, if we are to regain the stature of former years, we must move Masonry out of the lodge room and make it a powerful, constructive influence in community, state, national, and international affairs. The Masonic body, as such, cannot act, but we as individuals and Masons can certainly do our part. We must speak out through the public platform and the public press. We must assume a positive attitude in public affairs. Hopefully, such action will provide a powerful, modern awakening for Masonry today. The time is coming, it may even be here, when societies like ours must come out in the open with a public declaration of aims so all men may see in all this political confusion that there is one body with strong and worthy ideals. In the first degree, we are charged to be true to our government and just to our country. From Morals and Dogma, we are told, quote, "This degree teaches us that no free government can long endure when the people cease to select for their magistrates the best and wisest of their statesmen. When passing these by, they permit factions or sordid interests to select for them the small, the low, the ignoble, and the obscure, and into such hands commit the country's destinies. There is, after all, a divine right to govern, and it is vested to the ablest, wisest, best of every nation. A democratic government undoubtedly has its defects, because it is made and administered by men, and not by the wise gods. It cannot be concise and sharp like the despotic. When its ire is aroused, it develops its latent strength, and the sturdiest rebel trembles. But its habitual domestic role is tolerant, patient, and indecisive. Men are brought together, first to differ, then to agree. Affirmation, negation, discussion, solution, these are the means of attaining truth. Our present government is seen by many to be crumbling into ruin. It has lost much of its effectiveness because Americans have lost trust in it. The crisis has been long in the making. Long before the present flagrant corruption and moral bankruptcy in our government, it was axiomatic with sophisticated citizens that first-rate people seldom make a career of politics. Because we have entrusted civil government to men of mediocre ability and shabby morality, we now have the reverse of what we want, yet we're asking for it by our cynicism. This nation has reached a point in distrust of government beyond which it must not let itself drift apathetically any longer. We now have two apparent options. A, let government of the people, by the people, and for the people run right on down the drain, or B, take a full turnabout and return to the kind of government our forefathers designed for us. If the choice is option A, there will be a time of anarchy and chaos. Then, the savior of the republic will ride up to the rescue. Government will be restored with a vengeance, and it will be for the people, but not of and by them. Nations drift into despotism and dictatorship. As Chesterton said, a despotism is a tired democracy. If the choice is option B, it will be up to masonry, the church, and other institutions which influence the public mind to re-educate the nation about the worth and dignity of public service and the government. It is a truism and a notorious fact that a nation gets the kind of political leaders it deserves, and its deserts are determined by its expectations and demands. If we expect third-rate people and demand nothing better, that's what we get. If what we get in the end is option A, it will be because, in that fleeting moment, when we were still free to choose, we wrung our hands and said, "Well, that's politics. It's a dirty game, and we have to put up with the dirty people who play it for the rest of us. Who wants a saint in the White House?" Masons today, especially the younger ones, desire to act together as a fraternity, not as individuals only. We have fostered this idea in De Molay and continued it in our own craft. Historically, Masonry steers a wide path from involvement as a fraternity, but as individuals, we do the fraternity a great disservice if we do not involve ourselves in the task of bettering our schools, our community, and our governments. This stance of uninvolvement is sometimes unpopular, unattractive, and perhaps in some ways accounts for the decline in membership and NPD suspensions. We might also consider this as a partial reason for non-attendance in Blue Lodges because of the increasing commitments to appended bodies of masonry. Our craft traditionally prevents the sponsoring of Boy Scouts and other good works which the members can do in our other Masonic organizations. We return to the definition of the problem. How can our beloved craft find its way out of this predicament without radical change? Radical change is not desirable, nor is it necessary. Nothing forbids the members of the craft from joining others within the Masonic family to act in civic duties. From Morals and Dogma again, quote, "Masonry is action and not inertness. It requires its initiates to work actively and earnestly for the benefit of all their brethren, their country, and mankind. It is the patron and the oppressed. as it is the comforter and the consoler of the unfortunate and wretched. It is the advocate of the common people in those things which concern the best interest of mankind. Its fidelity to its mission will be accurately evidenced by the extent of the efforts it employs, and the means it sets on foot to improve the people at large and to better their condition." End quote. Specifically, what can we do? Our real civic responsibility is to convince the world by our actions that we are Masons. We should do things which provide leadership in improving the physical, moral, and emotional status of our environment. We should sit in on school board meetings, announce our support of well-qualified and fair-minded candidates for public office. We should support community drives for blood banks, traffic safety, and community beautification. We should support our Demolay, Rainbow, and Job's Daughters, not only with advice and money, but with our presence. In fine, we should provide, with our actions, the kind of public image which the whole world can admire and will wish to emulate. Most Worshipful Brother Marvin E. Anderson, Past Grandmaster, Arizona. All right, there you have that great piece on civics. Now, look, some of you might have cringed when he said we should be public in our endorsement of so-and-so. If we really listen to what he's saying, he's not saying, like, your lodge do this. He's saying you as a Mason. I'm a Freemason, and I endorse this candidate for these reasons. But we have to be so careful. This paper was written back in the 70s, but boy, it sure sounded like I was reading something for today, right? I'm not going to get political, but we all know we're in the midst of an impeachment trial here in America for the President of the United States of America. Since I've been alive, there has not been such a division in politics. It makes it difficult, especially with a lot of our brothers online and things, you know, the political debates that go back and forth. It gets crazy. So just some things to think about in terms of civic engagement. And wow, right? Again, it amazes me when we read these old papers, it's like they were written yesterday. And then by just chance, I randomly happen upon them. I reach my hand into the box and I pull out a paper, and it always seems kind of relevant. It's as if, you know, the masters are guiding the hand. It is interesting. Also, just for the edification of the brothers out there, there was a word in the paper that we just read that I actually didn't know what it meant. I had to look it up afterward, and it was when there was a quote. It said, "We of the present day need to bester ourselves and begin to do something besides expressing lovely platitudes and referring to the ancient accomplishments." So the word bester means to make physical or mental effort, to exert arouse in oneself, so to bolster yourself up. So if you're like me and you didn't know what that word meant, now you do. All right, so I'd like to remind everybody how to support this program. How do we support the program? Well, we do it through donations. This program is made for you, by you, and for the first couple of years, it was just me floating the bill, and it blew up. The show got so big and so crazy, people demanded it, and it required a much larger platform to be able to work with, so we needed to get some cash flow, and we opened it up to producers and things, and over the years, people have been producers to the program, have gifted to the program, and have stopped and started, and different people come and go. You know, you guys who are doing this for us, who donate over and over again, we really can't do it without you, and I really thank you from the bottom of my heart. But if you're somebody out there who wants to start contributing to the program today, you can do that. Go to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show. We've been doing the program here since 2011. You know, we did 3 or 4 shows, and then I was off for like 3 weeks because our power at the house went out for 4 solid days. So we had the worst storm in the whole world. It was crazy. But anyway, since 2011, this show has been here weekly, every single week. We go dark 2 times a year, and that is the last 2 weeks of the year to allow time for everybody to shut off our devices, and I don't record for the last 2 weeks, or maybe I do, but it basically gives everybody a break to do and be with their family. But if you would like to support the show, you can do that either through Patreon or you can do it through PayPal, whichever you choose. They both have the same exact benefits. If you go through Patreon or PayPal, There's a $2 a month contributor, and if you do that, you will receive your name posted to our website, immortalizing you as a contributor to the show. If you are a fellow, that's $5 a month, you will then have your name on the website forever, and a thank you card will be sent to you from me, handwritten card. It's not like, you know, pre-printed and I just slap your name on it and throw it in the post or anything. I actually write you a card because I really do have gratitude for all of our producers, fellows, and contributors. And if you want to donate $10 a month, then you are a producer, right? And as a producer, you'll get those other two benefits, plus I'll send you a producer's pin. And if you're a producer out there, take a picture of yourself wearing that pin wherever you are and post it to our Facebook wall or on social media. Tag us in it. I love to see it. It's awesome. You know, one time I got a picture of a guy who was wearing his pin at work, but he had to send it to my email through an encrypted mail service because he couldn't post where he was. It was super secret. But it was really awesome, and I got a real kick out of that. Where was it? Only he knows. He probably, if he's still listening to the show, he probably remembers. So it was awesome and a highlight. And if you're not down to do something monthly, we do also have a way to give a one-time gift, and it's through PayPal. You can click the button and choose the amount you want to donate, whether it's maybe it's a dollar, you know, whatever. It all goes into the kitty, and it all helps us with the infrastructure that we've developed over the past 9 years. 9 years of this show. Isn't that crazy? So anyway, the other ways you can help support us is the shop. You can go and you can just straight buy a producer's pin. I think I've got one Mason's Lady decal left. You can order its business time autographed copy. However, if you do, it's going to be a few minutes before I can get it because I'm actually out. So I have to order some more. And once I get those, I will be able to sign and ship them out. It's $15 just like Amazon, except I have to charge shipping because I got to ship it out. So it's $17.50 autographed to you. Or there's a link there, you can just pick it up through Amazon, or you can get it on Audible. And then, of course, if you want to support the Indiana Masonic Library and Museum, you can click the link for Laudable Pursuit, and you can check out the Audible version. We had a great talent do this, and it was just our way of giving back. Our lodge gave back to Chris Hodapp and the Knights of the North for their great action in putting together this book that's old now, but it's a great book. And we wanted to do it justice, so we made it an Audible book. And it wouldn't have been possible without the excellent direction and production skills of Brother Adam Hassel. So thank you so much to our brother. I also want to remind everybody to check out Franklin's Fortune. It is an amazing strategy card game you can play based on Ben Franklin's virtues. It's tremendous. It says 14 and up. Again, I tell everybody every week, my sons and I were playing this when they were 10 years old. It is fantastic. You can get the deck and read all about it, franklinsfortune.com. Click through our links there on our website and you can check it out. WCY is a coupon code. We'll get you $5 off, so that's pretty rad. We've got the bookstore. Anybody who came on the show and has a book out, we've got it linked up here. And if you click through our links and you buy the book, Amazon sends us like some pennies, like 16 cents on $10 or something silly, but every little bit helps. So check that out. I went ahead and we had some updates to some of my websites that I maintain. So rhjohnsonauthor.com is my author website. It's not exclusively Masonic, but a lot of the stuff that I'm involved in is there, including, I mentioned earlier, that academia.edu page, my Amazon author page, all that good stuff. So it lists some of my other projects, right? Got a young adult book coming out called The Extraordinary Tales, and I've actually got a really great friend and brother. You guys might know him, Brady McNulty. He's doing the illustrations for this book. It was a joint venture. I wrote a story about kids in a water park, and it's crazy. But it'll be really fun, and Brady did some amazing artwork for it. I'll just throw that out there, because who knows when that'll be available, but soon. We relaunched the WCY Media website, and of course, at the bottom of the website, if you go to wcymedia.org, what is this, right? This is the parent company that I keep our podcast under so that we're Legal Beagle. And you can contact us here on this website if you want to set up some sort of a Masonic podcast, or you want to do a blog, or you need assistance with websites and stuff. It's kind of like my freelance page to help out Brothers of the Masonic Fraternal and Occult Nature stuff. I don't charge anything to help or give advice. Take donations, and it's appreciated, but really the point is I'm all about Masonic education, so if I can help, I will. And this is just a streamlined, separate way that you can reach in so it doesn't get mixed into the crowd of other stuff that I deal with. All right, so our next piece is actually a piece I just penned. Maybe you read it, maybe you haven't. I was on the Winding Stairs Freemasonry group on Facebook, the best Facebook group for Freemasons on the interwebs flat. Nobody else holds a candle to it, and that's because it's no state lodge or anything like that. It's its own thing, moderated by a team of brothers from around the United States who they all talk to each other and moderate things and whatnot. And it's a great effort. And the best conversations happen there. And there's really little to no vitriol. It's really wonderful. I would say another great Facebook group, if you're out there to check out, is actually, it is, you know, under a state, but it's fantastic. There's some great conversation that goes on over there. That's the Texas Freemasonry group. So if you're not a member of that group, maybe try to check it out. I don't know if they'll let you in or not, but if they do, it's pretty rad. There are some great guys in there. I always look forward to the posts of some wonderful guys in there, including Robert Marshall and Lance Kennedy's in there, and a bunch of great guys, Steve Berryman, wonderful dudes. But I digress. So let's get back to this. The Winding Stairs had a meme that came out, and if you're not familiar with the meme, right, it's like a picture image with like some words on it, and it usually is meant to be funny, right? We talk about dank memes, right? I love and I'm a huge fan of the memes, and I laugh at all of these. We used to do Masonic Meme Mondays on Reddit, if you were familiar. I don't know how much that still goes on, but this guy posted the meme of like the car who's driving along, and he suddenly veers off into the exit, and the sign above the exit says, "Straight ahead, endless disappointment, veer right, demit, and move on." And the comments within this thread were amazing. And I really thought about it for a good 24 hours. And then it hit me, and I started writing this article, and I said, you know, I'm not going to post it. I deleted it. I sent it over to my best friend, Scott, and I said, hey, man, can you check this out? And he's like, well, it's actually good. And I said, all right, to heck with it. I'm posting it. And I did. And I really didn't expect the amount of support that came from this post. It wasn't widely circulated. Maybe it will be now. I don't know. But if I could, I would like to read it for you now. And I'd love to get any of your reactions, whether that's in the YouTube comments or on Facebook or whatever. So here we go. When the Meme Hits Home, by Midnight Freemason contributor Robert H. Johnson. Ouch. That meme above. Of course, I'm referencing the car veering off the highway. Special note. There are Freemasons who enjoy both the spiritual side and the fraternal side of the craft. In this piece, I address the hardliners, the esotericists who don't attend lodge for a lack of proper education, and the standard brothers who get up and walk out of an educational lecture. I'm pointing out a division that exists within two factions, but advocate for the esotericist to follow their path, even if that means coming to grips with the statement, quote, Freemasonry will not support my expectations of a mystery school, end quote. Still interested? Read on. I should say, if you're not interested, fast forward. In response to a meme that I found on the Winding Stairs Freemasonry group on Facebook just 24 hours ago, admittedly, I came to the conversation late. When I found it, it was already 45 comments deep, and I decided to comment. I said, this is a great meme. Felt this way for a long time. So I became a hermit, started a new lodge, and rededicated myself to outside esoteric schools. It's what you gotta do sometimes. I should admit, you will find me at many lodge meetings. I'm not really a hermit. I digress. After continuing to read the comments, I came to a sudden revelation. Maybe not so shocking, maybe not so deep, but true to me at least. That truth is that many people come to quote-unquote regular Freemasonry in the hopes of finding a modern-day mystery school. However, unless this is a lodge that is enjoying a deep esoteric spiritual experience as an established part of their identity, he won't find it. On the other side of the coin, there are those members, the majority, who are deeply satisfied for having joined something where they find not spirituality, but rather fellowship, camaraderie, and something to do that is a little more social. I hesitate to say a social club, but it's true for socialite and esoteric seekers alike. A socialite Mason isn't going to find a great business networking opportunity within a lodge of Kabbalists, and a practitioner of, say, Enochian magic isn't going to find value in running a fish fry. Arguably, Freemasonry is a spiritual and intellectual course of discipline. However, the craft has evolved into something wholly different through time. Whether this is wrong or right, who can say? I cannot say that the social club Masonry is doing it wrong, because it is exactly the way it is supposed to be according to how it is being promulgated by our institutions at large. How different is it from the context of the ritual? It's as if the word speculative has taken the full reins. Some would say Freemasonry isn't very Masonic. I would tend to agree with this, if only for the fact that we've redefined what Freemasonry means, which is why we have the relatively new traditional observant lodges and others. A sort of pushback, if you will. Freemasonry is healthy. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but also it's changing with the times. Regardless of the foundation or tradition, it is changing to be more accepting and to embrace wholeheartedly the more tangible things that the craft seems to represent. When we say, quote-unquote, the greatest of all these is charity, our organizations are latching on with everything and going all in like Maverick at a poker game. There are those esoteric Freemasons who are fighting what we consider a war to get Freemasonry back to what it was, or rather, what its intended purpose was. I'm afraid, outside of the traditional observant movement, educational-focused lodges, the more spiritual experience-based lodges, will always be the minority. They are doomed to suffer under the administration of an organization that promotes something completely different than what they are and represent. This makes it difficult to even operate within the confines of the system. So we're left wondering about the definition of Freemasonry and how that definition has changed with time. We all come to this conclusion that it's okay that it's not embodying what its original purpose purports to have been, education. The key is balance? Maybe. It doesn't work with hardliners. Consider the facts. This works for middle ground Masons who find themselves intrigued with the esoteric, but the practitioner of the royal arts rarely has any interest in anything of pomp and circumstance, honorifics, charity events, lunch and learns, retirement options, etc. And I will say that the opposite is true for our brothers on the other side. I would hardly expect such a Freemason to sit through a 90-minute discourse on the golden verses of Pythagoras, or to sit through a 45-minute Yale lecture on biblical foundations with an extensive Q&A afterwards. These are two separate organizations. Dare I say the esoteric version just doesn't fit Freemasonry any longer. Maybe it hasn't for a really long time. When we look at the records, we see the Masonic scholars throughout time have complained about education and practical means. In fact, the SRIA and SRICF were born out of Masonic needs to get deeper into the mystical. And yet, it was not practical enough. So out of this was born the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which later became the Alpha et Omega in the United States. And even this organization further split. Theosophy was no different. The one organization with a firm foundation later split into others due to differing approaches in teaching the work. Truly, there is a home for the esoteric Freemason like myself, but our lodges number in the tens. It is difficult to find a lodge where we fit. Traditional Masonry, quote-unquote, is not an esoteric experience. It is the experience of the social and charitable lodges where the majority of brothers find themselves once or twice a month. The meme in question above, I don't blame the man for making it. In fact, the meme spoke to me. We hear the words ad nauseam, be the change. Really, I think we need to get real. Freemasonry is not where I would recommend anyone go for an esoteric experience. Not until it's the norm, anyway. Modernity has changed what Freemasonry is. The majority has latched on, and it's not really right for any esotericist to try and change that. While I'm on the topic of dank memes, as much as I love the golden meme below, well, I just keep quiet. Mostly. When I sent this article to a brother, he alluded to Freemasonry being a beginner's guide, an introduction or a menu of different divergent paths which lead to some esoteric places. And maybe he's right. I think there may be something to that. I say let Freemasonry flourish in the way it is being led. Celebrate our brothers and their accomplishments. If we can't do this, then maybe we shouldn't be there anymore. Now, the meme I shared was, of course, this guy loading up this small tank round, and it says, me and Masonic education is the bullet, and then he's shooting it directly at a guy on the shore, and he's labeled the Supper Club Mason, like, you're forcing Masonic education where it's just not doing anything, or it's not needed, it's harmful, maybe. But, yeah, this was my soapbox. In the beginning of my Masonic career, you all know I started this podcast out of a need for Masonic education, and I'm still there. I still love Freemasonry. It is the path that put me on other paths, and I still practice Freemasonry every single minute of every single day. But it's probably time to make that distinction that we shouldn't always be looking at this like a war, that we have to get into a lodge and teach them all the spiritual aspects and to look down on other brothers for, you know, not practicing what we practice. Yeah, some of us are practitioners, and some are not. That's just the way it is.
Coming to Nazareth during his ministry, Jesus preached just as he had been doing throughout the countryside. In other places, he had drawn enthusiastic crowds. In his hometown, however, people in the crowd became derisive. They recognized him to be one of their own, a common tradesman, and therefore not someone who should be taken seriously as a teacher or prophet. Is not this, they asked, the carpenter? This passage is where we learn Jesus, like his earthly father Joseph, was a carpenter, according to contemporary Bible translations. Both Mark chapter 6, verse 3, and Matthew chapter 13, verse 55, give an account of the incident using the Greek word tekton to refer to Jesus' profession. The verse in Mark, for example, asks, is not this the carpenter, ho tekton, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph, and of Judah and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us? The word tekton, however, does not directly translate as carpenter. It more accurately means builder or craftsman, a designation which, in fact, leaves Jesus' true profession in doubt. A carpenter would fit in the category of builder or craftsman, and that may well have been what Jesus did. He would not have built homes in an area where trees were scarce, but would have made furniture, doors, and tools, such as plows. However, the most dominant profession around Nazareth, where Jesus grew up and would have practiced his trade, was stone masonry. The area was rich in stone with several quarries, including one in the heart of Nazareth. Virtually all buildings were made of stone, and the demand for stone masons would have been high. During the time Jesus would have worked as a craftsman, the Romans expanded the small town of Sepphoris into a city for Jewish aristocrats who supported Rome. True, the venture would have required carpenters, but the greatest demand would have been for masons. Sepphoris, today Zippori, was less than 4 miles from Jesus' home, and regardless of his craft, it is likely he worked on the project. We'll never know for sure, since the broad definition of tecton could refer to a number of professions. But taken in context and in light of the more likely profession of the tradesman in Nazareth in that era, it could be that Jesus was not a carpenter, but an operative mason. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, wonderful piece there by illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. Just another amazing installment. So if you love this kind of stuff, I can't recommend enough his writings. He has a brilliant way of doing editing as well. But if you like these little stories, he has an older book. I'll say older in quotes, but check out Tales from the Craft. It's still one of my favorites, right up there with Freemason at Oak Island, which is a great book, especially right now with History Channel's number one nonfiction show, which is that Oak Island show. So it's pretty cool. It's a good compendium. So check it out. Go to the Whence Came You bookstore right there on our website to find more. All right, so for our next piece, I've got something pretty cool, and I pulled this one from the archive over at the Masonic Philosophical Society. This is their oldest piece they had on record, and this comes from their website from October 2015. The title, Answering the Call to Adventure. And I just love this one, guys. Get ready. In today's technology-focused culture, we are often rendered deaf to the nature's grand call to adventure. Why endure discomfort and unknown risk when we can comfortably sit on our couches and watch someone else's adventure on television? My response? Why not? We all deserve to be the hero in our own great adventure story. Down deep, each of us is a hidden explorer, awaiting an opportunity to face the unknown and emerge victorious. When the call comes, how will you answer? The Heroic Age of Antarctic Exploration. The early years of the 20th century were known as the Heroic Age of Antarctic Exploration, and the South Pole represented the planet's final unknown frontier. In the published maps of the day, the Antarctic interior was a blank canvas upon which inspired nations and ambitious men alike sought to make their mark. In 1914, an explorer named Ernest Shackleton answered his greatest call to adventure. He ambitiously set out to lead the first expedition across Antarctica, starting from the coast of the Weddell Sea, traversing the South Pole, and ending up at the Ross Sea. Having been a part of two previous expeditions to the continent, Shackleton possessed experience and knowledge of polar climates. He was the rare sort of man who learned from his past mistakes and systematically sought to apply those lessons to his future endeavors. Knowing the psychological strain that the men would be forced to endure in the Arctic conditions, Shackleton required a crew that shared his idealistic vision and tenacious spirit. Men like those in one of Shackleton's favorite poems who longed to mark the map's void spaces. Methodical in his planning, Shackleton created a list of qualities that he was searching for that included optimism, patience, imagination, combined with idealism, and courage. Shackleton reportedly then placed an advertisement in the London Times which read, in all caps, "Men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition in case of success. Ernest Shackleton." How many of us would respond to such an advertisement? Who would volunteer to sail through frigid seas, to walk across an uncharted, frozen abyss? Reportedly, thousands of men sought a spot on Ernest Shackleton's crew, and just 28 were chosen. The endurance is legendary in the records of polar exploration, despite the fact that the expedition's initial objectives were never even reached. The expedition. In August 1914, the ship set sail for Antarctica by way of the South Georgia Island, a whaling settlement off the coast of South America, Heading south, the wooden ship immediately encountered problems, navigating through unusually thick packs of ice that created an ever-moving labyrinth of destruction. By January 1915, the crew aboard the Endurance was able to see the Antarctic mainland, but fiercely cold temperatures and polar winds trapped the vessel in ice. Locked in place, the crew had no choice but to wait until the warmer temperature of spring could free the vessel. Shackleton demonstrated great leadership skills in keeping the crew members occupied in strict routines to mitigate the collective fears and anxiety of the men on board. Months passed, and morale continued to sink as the ship remained cinched despite the warmer temperatures of summer. The sheer pressure of the ice was weakening the boat, causing the emission of auditory signals that the boat's collapse was imminent. Creaks and groans were interspersed with sharp explosions reported by the crew to sound like gunshots and heavy fireworks. Tom McLeod responded in fear, quote, "Do you hear that? Will none of us get back to our homes again?" End quote. Yet, as the wood was violently twisted and pinched, Ernest Shackleton remained astonishingly calm, displaying remarkable self-control, optimism, and almost casual indifference to the impending doom. Facing the failure of his mission, he rejected defeat by adapting his mission and setting his sights on a new objective. He wrote, quote, "If one goal had disappeared, we'll have another one. And so, if I can't cross the continent, I'm going to bring all my men back alive." End quote. After ordering the men off the sinking ship, Shackleton marched his crew out onto the ice with the barest of supplies to make camp. By April 1916, the ice began to break up and the men navigated in three rowboats to the rocky, deserted refuge of Elephant Island. Knowing that inaction meant that all would perish there, Shackleton decided to attempt one of the most daring open boat voyages in recorded history. In a small rowboat, Shackleton and five of his crew managed somehow to navigate 800 miles to South Georgia through hurricane-force winds and raging seas, utilizing only a sextant, a handheld tool that provides direction via celestial positioning. Imprecise readings would have meant the waves, wind, and current would have led the small craft into an open ocean and certain death. Due to the unparalleled navigating skills of Frank Worsley, the crew made it to South Georgia, but they landed on the uninhabited side of the island. With almost no equipment, Shackleton and the men crossed 30 miles of uncharted mountains in 36 hours. Reaching Whaling Station, Shackleton enlisted the help of the crew at the Yelko Chilean steamer. Traveling back to Elephant Island, he rescues the remaining men on August 30, 1916. "I have done it," he wrote to his wife Emily. "Not a life lost, and we have been through hell." Displaying the utmost devotion and responsibility for his team, his men returned his commitment with fierce loyalty and uncompromising faith in his ability to bring them home safely. The call of Freemasonry. In our modern day, we may never face a life and death survival gauntlet like the men of the Endurance. We face more subtle foes of moral relativism, obsessive consumerism, and weak social networks created by distance and reliance on technology. Yet we still must endeavor to create meaning and find purpose in our chaotic world. Through self-improvement and service to humanity, we can chart our own course to happiness and fulfillment. Freemasonry calls us to embark on a profound adventure in a realm unexplored and uncharted by most modern individuals, to know oneself. Through hard work and perseverance, Masonry provides us with the tools for the highest degree of moral, intellectual, and spiritual development for all mankind. Moreover, it teaches us the skills of leadership and reminds us the importance of caring for our fellow man. Supported by the bonds of brotherhood, we can accomplish great feats of daring in our own inner quest. Sir Ernest Shackleton, February 15, 1874, passed away January 5, 1922, was initiated into Navy Lodge No. 2612 of the United Grand Lodge of England on the 9th of July, 1901. Shackleton attended the first regular meeting of the Guild of Freemen Lodge, number 3525 in 1911, and was passed to the second degree by that lodge on the 2nd of November 1911. He was raised to the sublime degree of a Master Mason at Guild of Freemen Lodge on the 30th of May 1913. How incredible of a tale is this? You know, we've talked about Ernest Shackleton back in the day when I used to do the famous Freemasons in each episode. But this was just incredible. I absolutely love the advert. Men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return, doubtful, honor and recognition in case of success. That is just, I'm ready to apply. How amazing is that? Anyway, I hope you all enjoyed this week's episode. It was a joy to bring it to you, and we are just about at that time. So, again, thanks to all of our contributors, our fellows, and our producers. Please go to WCYpodcast.com, click on the supporters, and you'll see a list of our current producers, fellows, and contributors. These are the people that make this show possible. If you know them, say thanks, because they're assisting. And if you want to be a producer of this program, then go ahead and do that. And I thank you for your support. I'll see you guys all at Lodge. Until next week, stay on the level. For Wentz Gaming, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.